White Rocket Entertainment.
See, I got a big poster of the Avengers with an Audi.
How did they get? Because they're all in it, right?
They're all over the place in the movie.
Well,
there's so many Audis in that movie.
I noticed it. I mean, I'm sitting there in the theater watching that movie and noticing the specific number of a certain type of car.
You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Ten, nine, eight, seven, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff. We have a liftoff, and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center. The Saturn V is moving off the pad. It is now clear of the tower.
Hello, and welcome to the White Rocket Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with the Earth Station One Network. It's one long conversation with a variety of guests about the best of popular culture. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and this week's topic is Captain America Civil War, and we are revisiting it with Bobby Polite. Bobby, the co-creator of the Sentinels books with yours truly, and other various projects, and I am delighted to have him back on the show. Welcome back aboard, Bobby.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
I was really looking forward to talking about this movie with several people, but particularly with you, because you and I go way, 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 way back with this kind of stuff, and we have very similar views about most of it. And so it's going to be interesting to me, because we haven't really chatted about it very much yet. Not very much, just peripherally.
No, I saw it and immediately sent you an email and said, please go see it because I needed to talk to somebody about it.
And that's right. And here we are. Yeah. And we haven't really done much of that yet. We've touched on a few things, messaging back and forth and emailing, but this will be fun because we're going to spend the next hour or so just kind of talking about our impressions of it, kind of going through it. I think that I did the show a few days ago with David Wright, and we touched on quite a few things about it. But I have a feeling that we're going to go in a completely different sets of directions on this. And one of the things I want to talk about with you that David and I never really got around to is the future of the Marvel Cinematic Universe after this current round is over. So we're going to put that on the back burner, and we'll come around to that before we're done, I hope. So now, first up, tell the listeners, what did you expect going in? In other words, were you like, oh boy, Civil War? Or were you, oh, they did Civil War? What was your mindset for?
When they announced the title, okay, Winter Soldier, I wasn't excited about it at first because Winter Soldier, I hate that character. I just hate the character. And I watched the movie, and it was one of the best Marvel movies made. I loved it. It was a 70s thriller. It was great. Then they announced the next movie as Civil War, and I go, no, I hate that storyline too.
That's what I said.
But at that point, the Russos had built up so much goodwill for me. I was like, let them have it. Let's see what happens with it. So I was excited about it. I actually try to go out of my way now to avoid spoilers and things like that because it used to be I was greedy. I wanted to find out everything about the movie before it happened. Now I just want to experience it. And I try not to let myself get too hyped up about the movie. But I was getting pretty hyped up about this one. I mean, it's got Ant-Man. They brought Ant-Man back. I love it. And it's got the Black Panther. I mean, it's got the Black Panther. That's so cool.
We haven't talked about this. What did you think about the Ant-Man movie?
Oh, I love the Ant-Man movie. It was exactly what I wanted out of it. I enjoyed that movie more than I enjoyed Age of Ultron. I was very pleased with it. I came out of that movie with just a huge grin, and I went back and saw it within the next week. And I would rewatch it probably before I would rewatch Age of Ultron.
Yeah.
Of course, that's me. I've got a particular view of Ultron, and they didn't put my view of Ultron on the screen, so.
Well, right. The audience needs to understand that you and I are Avengers fans from way back and from about the same era back in the late mid-70s. And so, you know, we have that Jim Shooter Ultron very, you know, engraved into our DNA now. And that's just how we kind of imagine him. So
I want him completely indestructible, calling people dolts and hitting them in the head with encephalo beams.
And cussing. You know? I love that he's a cussing robot. He's
right.
The spot that cusses and taunts Thor. I love that about him. Yeah.
So. Well, that was one of the scenes when they announced that Ultron was going to be the villain. I wanted that scene. I wanted Thor to get cocky and throw his hammer and hit him and have the landscape shake, but have Ultron just standing there going, "What?
Exactly.
Was that supposed to hurt?"
Yes.
But we didn't get that. We did get some classic looking scenes out of it, but
yeah.
Anyway, we're talking about the wrong movie.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah. No, I agree about Ant-Man, though. It ended up being, I think, my overall highest rated movie last year. But so, yeah, I was very happy to have, I mean, because you had, that's the thing about Civil War is you had several sort of like, not necessarily comedy relief, but less serious things to it. And obviously, Ant-Man and Spider-Man were two of the keys to making it a serious movie that wasn't too serious.
Right. Well, and that's really, to me, that's a key to making a good action movie, especially based on comic books, because there's always levity throughout. I mean, think about it. When you read The Avengers, Wonder Man and the Beast were comedic, but they weren't always comedic.
Right.
But you have to have that change in tone occasionally. You just can't go all one way or the other. You got to know your characters.
And with a topic like Civil War, there was a very strong possibility of going too grim, too depressing, too dark, because it's about watching, you know, all these characters that we admire and love and have come to care about and love, deciding they want to beat each other up, you know. So
right, well, but but they handled it so well because they didn't want to beat each other up.
That's right.
That's what I loved about it. I mean, Iron Man goes to get Spider-Man because of his webbing, because he looks at it and goes, "That's a non-lethal way to tie people down."
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and I loved that about the movie. I loved the fact that they didn't have their heart in it. Now, the newer Avengers kind of did. You know, Scarlet Witch scolds Hawkeye for pulling his punches.
Yeah. But she's in a different place as a character, though, from...
Well, she's angry. She, you know, she got forcibly deterred in her home. So...
Yeah. Joe Crow at RevolutionSF.com, he asks us every time a big movie comes out, he asks everybody for four-word movie reviews. And I'd forgotten that we do see the Vision again at the end, because I was thinking the last time we saw the Vision was when Wanda zapped him. And so my four-word movie review was Vision heading for China.
That's speaking of the Vision.
Yes.
The Vision in Age of Ultron was this mishmash of things, none of which actually summed up to the Vision. He was like a living computer with the ability to go all over the internet, and he seemed to destroy the little Ultron robots by pushing his hand into them and melting them. The Vision in Civil War was the Vision.
Yeah.
Density control, his attitude was right. It was just I really liked that they had that in this movie.
You know, the one thing about it, though, I'm just not in love with the makeup. I like the costume to a certain degree, and I love Paul Bettany. He's one of my favorite actors. I always
like
Paul Bettany. And he has the voice and the attitude, the personality. It's all great. I just am not I'm not thrilled with the very busy makeup.
Yeah, the busyness on the head is the only part of it that bothers me. Because he's got those extra red stripes around the back of the head. If they got rid of that, I think I'd be fine with it. And from a distance, he's perfect.
Yeah, I feel like if they would just paint him red and put the costume on him. I mean, I don't want it to look like the 1970s, you know, TV superheroes where they're basically literally wearing spandex and paint. But I mean,
right?
I feel almost like they went a little too far in the other direction and just made him a little too much going on there, but. But other than that, no, I agree. I never dreamed. I mean, he's a hard character to get right in live action. I can't think of almost any character that'd be harder to get right in live action than the Vision, just because.
Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
I'm nervous about that movie. I have so much high hopes for that movie, but you know, nervous.
Yeah. Anyway. You got to qualify it. Well, one of the things, and I don't want to rehash stuff I've talked about before because there's so much more we can talk about, but I will just say, because I want to get your impression on this up front. I read Civil War, the comic, as it came out, and what I've always said about it is that it was contrived in the sense that They decided what they wanted the story to be, and then they forced characters to act out of character in order to make that story work, come out, you know, that way.
Right.
And with the movie, I felt like they took the parts that worked from the comic book story, threw out everything else, gave it a completely different reason for happening, basically Winter Soldier, and addressed almost every, you know, problem that the original story had.
I didn't read Civil War. I was out of comic books at that time, out of Marvel. So I kept up with a little bit of what happened in it, and that was it. And I didn't like the idea of Iron Man becoming a villain and Cap becoming a resistance leader. I mean, these guys have known each other forever. They're going to talk. And that's what I liked in this movie. Mm-hmm. If Zemo doesn't come along, there's no conflict.
Yeah.
He forces the conflict by setting up the Winter Soldier.
Yeah.
And from there, it's really a very personal story of people who are friends, but they're at odds over – it's not just their beliefs they're at odds over. They're at odds over what's happened in the past and their guilt over what's happened in the past. Exactly. And they're trying to find a ways to handle it. And it's so cool because it really works. You don't go through it and think, well, Iron Man's the villain because he's on this side, or Cap's, you know, some sort of rebel traitor because he's on this side. You look at it, and by the end, oh my God, you just feel horrible for Tony. He's found out things he shouldn't have found out, that have decimated him, and he's done some things that he's probably going to regret. Right. And Cap has too, to some degree. I mean, they've split up.
Well, let me get your reaction to this before I forget about it. The thing that I've been thinking about since the last show I did about this, so this is totally new. I mean, everything we're going to talk about is new, but this is a totally new concept, and I want to roll it out for you. I've been chatting a little bit online with some various people, and I've sort of developed this not theory, but this set of ideas. My idea is, the more I think, because here's what happened: is that as soon as it was over, bunches of my friends online started saying, you know, Cap won, Cap won, Cap won. And I guess they're basically just looking at that last fight where, you know, it took Winter Soldier and Cap together to take down Tony, when Tony basically, I would argue, wanted to be taken down because he was just in agony and just wanted to swing his fist until somebody knocked him out, and or he killed Winter Soldier, one of the two. But my theory is, my thing is that I don't care about that. That wasn't even really relevant. I mean, what I cared about was that everything leading up to that was Captain America saying, I value Bucky more than all my other friends put together, and I'm willing to let all my other friends go to prison. I'm willing to let all my other friends maybe even get killed just so I can help Bucky one more time. And that ticked me off. Your thought?
I don't think that's the case. Here's my problem with the idea that Cap sold everybody out. Mm-hmm. You're forfeiting everybody else's agency by saying that. Sam went with him willingly, knowing what he was getting into. Hawkeye went with him willingly, knowing what he was getting into. They told Ant-Man what he was getting into, and Scarlet Witch knew what she was getting into. And they all stayed there and did it. As a matter of fact, they even say in the middle of the big airport fight, if some of us are going to win, some of us have to lose. So they basically sacrificed themselves because they believed Cap's belief in the Winter Soldier not being guilty of that particular thing anyway. Everybody knows he's guilty.
Yeah.
But still, you know, Cap has the inside scoop on it. He's been brainwashed into doing all this stuff.
Right.
Well, and so I don't think that it's fair to demonize either one of them, and I think the movie goes well out of its way not to do that. And if you want to look at it and say there's a winner, Zemo's the winner because he got exactly what he wanted and he still lived.
Yeah, there's no question about that. Well, David's point, I mean, I want to get your reaction to it. David's point is, in the Marvel Universe, mind control is your get-out-of-jail-free card.
But is the Winter Soldier out of jail?
Well, no, that's true. He's in a more tropical jail. Actually,
he's frozen and not even able to live his life. He doesn't trust his own actions and his own moves.
Right.
I mean, you have to think of it that way. Everybody wants physical consequences. They, you know, like I read a number of people online and said, "Oh, it's typical Marvel movie, no consequences at the end." I'm like, "Are you kidding me?
Really?
You've lost friends. You've lost access to your home. You can't go back to your own country. You're on the run. You're wanted. You know, just because nobody was killed doesn't mean there were no consequences. Tony has got to face up to the fact, as the Black Widow tried to point out to him, this is not about him." I think his belief in the Sokovia Accords was a way to try to push his guilt over creating Ultron and some of the other things that he did off on another authority and say, look, they're taking it from me. Now I can just go do what they tell me to do, and it's not my fault anymore. And that's wrong.
Right. Well, where do the others end up? I mean, we got the impression that Captain America busts them out of prison, right out of the raft.
Well, he busts them out of the raft, and I think they're all in Wakanda. I think you've got Team Captain America in Wakanda, and you've got Team Iron Man still with the Avengers.
I wonder what kind of extradition deal we have with Wakanda.
Probably not a good one, since they've been basically a reclusive country the whole time. And besides, you know, at the end, T'Challa says, "Let them try." You know, if he's going to protect the Winter Soldier, he's going to protect the rest of them too.
You know who the founder of Wakanda was?
No, I don't know.
Jack Kirby.
Oh, well, yeah.
Big statue up in the middle of the jungle. The king.
Oh, boy.
T'Challa was the prince, but there's only one king.
Right. Okay. And speaking of that, Chadwick Boseman was fantastic.
Oh, man.
He was so regal, and he that part was so wonderful. I was worried about how he was going to look on screen. I've always liked Chadwick Boseman since I saw 42, and so I was excited about him being cast in the role. But oh my goodness, they just do such a good job bringing their characters to screen, and they make little changes, but they're logical changes, and they work, and they don't sacrifice the character's, you know, essence to do their looking at you, DC, and
yeah,
it's great.
Yeah, been a lot of that this week, no doubt about that.
Well, they deserve every. That movie deserves the re-roasting it's getting. You know, I'm sorry. It just does.
Yeah, it suffered once on its own, and now it's getting to suffer all over again in comparison with this one.
Right.
Well, it's funny. There have been people on Twitter that follow me that have said that I root for DC to fail. And I'm like, no, I root for DC to succeed. I'm just waiting.
Well, I want DC to succeed too, because how else am I going to get a Mr. Miracle movie?
Yeah, I want a Green Lantern Corps movie that doesn't suck.
Right. They don't have to be rivals. They don't. And and they don't have to take this attitude of, well, Marvel's doing it this way, so we have to do it differently. No. Look at your characters and make stories about the characters as they exist. And it will be fine. It'll work. You know, Batman movies should be detective movies, not Two Fists of Fury in a Dark Cape movies.
Yeah. And every other DC movie shouldn't be that Batman movie.
Right, exactly.
So, well, let's look at the cast a little bit. I just want to run through Captain America and Iron Man together. I mean, it was Captain America's movie, and I think that they went a long way toward making it clear that it was Captain America's movie. But what did you think about the two of them individually and as friends and, you know, colleagues and then enemies in this movie?
I think they did a great job. I believed that they were friends. I believed that they wanted to find a solution to the problem. As a matter of fact, Cap almost signs the Accords until he finds out that Tony's had, you know, Wanda detained by the Vision. And then that sets them off on that road again. I think the actors did a great job. I believe that there was a lot of emotion and angst and pain behind what was going on for both of them.
Oh, well, Bobby, but let me interrupt you, Bobby, what you just said. Holy cow, I hadn't even thought about this until you said it, but having the Scarlet Witch detained by the Vision is something Ultron would have done, not Tony.
Exactly. Now it's reverb again. Can we start over?
I think it's just your cat.
No, I can hear my cat. Oh, well, now it's gone. Okay. Maybe it is my cat.
I'll do a lot of editing to this one.
Okay. Anyway, That was one of the things I didn't think about this. I read this in a review online, and it was talking about Tony. Captain America points out that the Scarlet Witch is just a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And that she's in harm's way. And then Tony goes out of his way to put a 15-year-old kid in harm's way. He's not thinking. He's not thinking. It's one thing to put Spider-Man up against Cap because he knows he's probably pretty sure that Cap is not going to kill anybody. But he put him out on the field with a Winter Soldier who, for all he knows, kills everybody he meets.
That's true.
So, and I think it took seeing Spider-Man get just, you know, practically knocked out to go, oh, wait a minute, what am I doing?
Yeah.
So.
To the point of Robert Downey Jr., Tony Stark, Iron Man, how much longer do we want to see him doing this? Or is that actor and that character the heart of the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
After Iron Man 3, I was ready for Robert Downey Jr. to go somewhere else. I am off that bandwagon big time. If he wants to play Tony Stark until he's 80 years old, go right ahead. As a matter of fact, we've already proven that they can de-age him, so, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I kept thinking, is this from Less Than Zero, or what is that? You know, that scene where they made him look like a teenager with his parents, and that it looked like they took something out of Less Than Zero or one of those movies he did back in the 80s and CGI'd him in. That was interesting.
Right. I think that I'm on board with all of the actors playing these characters as long as they want to and they feel invested in it.
Yeah.
So because they're making movies that I'm absolutely enjoying. I mean, I sit there and I'm a 10-year-old kid watching these things. It's great.
So were you saying that that Downey's redeemed himself or was that?
I just didn't like Iron Man 3. And so I came out of it with a bad taste in my mouth. It's really not. He didn't have to redeem himself at all.
No, it's awful. And we all pretty much every list I ever see, and including mine, whenever we rank them, it's always last. So,
but yeah, I do believe that Downey is the heart of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I think that if he's in a movie, that it's going to boost the movie. I think that's why he's going to be in a Spider-Man movie.
I had a lot of people angry at me the other day because I put my Facebook status as all capital letters. I sent it to you, right? They're putting
and
in a Spider-Man movie to help Spider-Man in terms of box office. I just thought that was hilarious.
Well, but I think it's a good move, and I think Spider-Man needs help. They've had two fairly bad movies come out from the last ones, and that on top of Spider-Man 3, which was just not good. And those three movies descend from the heights of Spider-Man 2, which in my book is still one of the best superhero movies ever made.
And that was 12 years ago this summer.
Right. And I think it's a good thing. I think it helps bring people back into Spider-Man. And I think the fact that Tom Holland just absolutely nailed that character and he was so good on the screen. I was just giggling watching him take down Falcon and Winter Soldier at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, he catches Winter Soldier's punch and Winter Soldier's got this look on his face like, what the heck? And he's joking about it. You got a metal arm? That's so cool.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, so talking about Spider-Man, this movie, who would you like to see as his villain if he does a movie with Iron Man? Who's left that he hadn't fought now?
Well, my sentimental favorite is Mysterio.
Mysterio, yeah.
I believe it's probably going to be the Vulture, though. And I'm fine with that. I want old school villains. I don't want any Carnage and, you know, that sort of thing. I want them to run through his true old school villains first.
I wish
now Vulture's not my top pick, but no. You know.
But they've used, you know, what about the Shocker?
You know, as a side character, but just can the Shocker carry the movie as a villain by himself?
No, he can't. But he has
Mysterio could.
Yeah, Mysterio's awesome. Well, you know, you could just use a bunch of those little ones. I mean, Spidey's got the great Batman-style rogues gallery of a bunch of little cheesy villains, and you could do a bunch of them. But
yeah, just as long as you've got good writers and you focus on the story first and the villain set pieces second.
Right. Sure.
So,
I'm looking at Natasha now, and I'm thinking that this makes me think of another topic that I wanted to get your opinion on. David talked about it very briefly, that the Russos have a very distinct style visually.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at Winter Soldier movie and you can look at this movie and you can tell that the same people were responsible. You know, they have the same palette. Somebody pointed out on another show I listened to that in Russo Brothers movies, it's like it's always noon in a parking garage or something. You know, it's very bright colors, bright daylight. Everything is open and wide and sunny. You know, it's never cold or wet or night or. And I know that's not true. There are plenty of scenes, but it's just when I think of a Russo Brothers Marvel movie now, I think of downtown Atlanta at noon. You know.
But which is amusing you say that, since a lot of that opening scene was shot in downtown Atlanta at noon.
That's what I mean. That's what we're looking at. And so, Larry Davis was sending me pictures he was taking from the set like 2 years ago when they were filming it. He's like, guess what movie this is? I'm like, I don't know.
I like that they're willing to shoot in the day. I like that everything's not dusk, gritty, rainy. You know, that kind of thing. I like seeing the action. I like seeing what's going on. I think that night and that sort of thing should be used as a mood enhancer, but it would have done nothing for the opening fight scene or the fight at the airport to have it be at night.
Yeah. No, I agree. And the thing that's cool is having that airport fight, which was the centerpiece of the movie, having that in bright daylight in a big open flat space just gave them basically a big gymnasium to do all their exercises in, you know.
I mean,
including Giant Man. So let's
oh my God,
roll him in. Let's talk about. We talked about Black Panther. We talked about Spider-Man. What about Giant Man?
Oh my God, I loved that. I fortunately did not have that spoiled for me. I didn't see the stupid Lego set that had the giant Ant-Man figure in it. I didn't have it spoiled. I had no idea it was coming.
I didn't either. I didn't see that either, and I'm sorry to find out that existed. I'd have been mad.
See, John had it spoiled for him.
My
friend John Kring.
Yes.
When he grew to giant size. I shouted yes at the screen.
I was like, yeah. I grabbed Amy and I'm like, it's German. It's German. I was about to cry. I was like, oh my gosh, it's German.
And Paul Rudd's reaction to laugh. You know, was great.
Yeah. Great.
I was so glad they did that.
Does that mean in the next one he's going to be Goliath? We're just going to see.
No. Ant-Man and the Wasp, man. Got to have Ant-Man and the Wasp.
I know it's going to be Ant-Man and the Wasp, but I mean, it's some. Well, you know the other thing you can. Well, no, dang it. Now, see, if they're going to have Ant-Man and the Wasp, it's too bad they've already used Yellow Jacket, because they could have. But Lang was never Yellow Jacket, though, was he?
No, he was never Yellow Jacket.
Yeah, so.
That's one of the things I actually really liked about how they melded both Hank Pym and Scott Lang into the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I liked Michael Douglas as Hank Pym so much. I liked his animosity to the Stark family and his attitude, you know, oh, anybody can build a tin suit, you know, let's see what I'm working with.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I really enjoyed that very much. I like that counterpoint.
You know, there's almost a little Simon Williams in him there too.
A little bit, I guess.
I'd like to see Wonder Man. I know we're never going to get him. I mean, I know he's referenced in Doctor Strange. Yeah. Isn't it Doctor Strange?
There are posters for a Simon Williams film festival in Guardians of the Galaxy.
That's it. Is that Guardians of the Galaxy 2?
Yeah, the second Guardians of the Galaxy.
Okay. I knew there was a Marvel movie coming up where there's movie posters on the wall of him, but does that mean is that our Simon Williams? This is Wonder Man, for those that don't know, who's an actor when he's not a superhero. Is that all the Simon Williams we're going to get, or is that just teasing something?
Who knows? I mean, it could be just an Easter egg, because you know they can't put everybody on screen.
No, well,
I did hear that if they do, see, they're changing the names of the next Avengers movie, so I assume it's still going to be Thanos involved, But they said that there may be characters that appear in those movies who have not been introduced and they won't be directly introduced. They're just there because of the need to be there.
Whoa, I didn't know that. Well, that means
I read that online. I can't remember the attribution, but see, that made me excited because maybe Stingray will show up.
It could. How many are we going to have at that point? Because you've got all the Avengers, both teams now. You've got maybe the Guardians of the Galaxy show up if this is basically like the Korvac saga and a general Thanos story rolled together, which is kind of how I see it playing out.
Well, when I read that, I pictured it as the cinematic version of a George Perez splash page. You look in the background and you just happen to see Simon Williams flying by as Wonder Man, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, Lord, I'd faint in the theater if you start having obscure characters from a Perez poster in the background.
It'd be wonderful, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, wow. Well, yeah, I haven't enunciated this out loud before, but yeah, let me follow up on that again and see if you had any reaction to it. Is I know that they're doing basically the Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity War story, and that's a great story, but I really wonder if they're going to do it a bit more like Korvac than they are like the actual Infinity stories that Starlin did, because you got the Collector now. And you've got, you know, the Guardians of the Galaxy. You've got all these things that were not in Infinity Gauntlet, but were in the Korvac saga. So
right, I would I actually, because they're changing the names of it, I almost hope they actually end up doing the actual Korvac saga. You know, I'm a Thanos fan. I like Thanos.
Yeah.
I didn't like the Infinity Gauntlet. I get tired of the villain with the ultimate what's it.
Yeah.
Gadget thing. So,
well, Thanos has one story, and he just keeps doing the same story over and over. I mean,
now I will point out, we have Spider-Man now, so we could do Marvel 2-in-1 Annual 2, which is a better story than the Infinity Gauntlet.
Oh, you're right. That's the Thanos story. That's the Thanos story I want. That's my all-time single favorite comic book story. For those that don't know, that's the story where it's Avengers Annual number 7 and then Marvel 2-in-1 Annual number 2. And real quick, in Avengers Annual number 7, basically Warlock confronts Thanos and Thanos kills him and puts him in the Soul Gem, and then the Avengers confront Thanos and lose. And then in Marvel 2-in-1 Annual number 2, Spider-Man and the Thing show up and they rescue the Avengers and they beat down Thanos to the point that Warlock comes. Oh, Spider-Man frees Warlock from the Soul Gem and Warlock seemingly kills Thanos. Do you think we're going to have Warlock in any of these movies?
I don't know. I think that would be a difficult thing at this point to set up, but we'll see. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen in the next Guardians of the Galaxy movie.
Yeah. Somebody said he's a hard character to define, and I said, well, you can't define him. He's different every single time he appears. I mean, he's a chess master type schemer. He's got powers, but I honestly couldn't tell you what they were. He's
golden skin.
Yeah, I mean, he's got an infinity gem, the soul gem, but that's not even his. I mean, he just ended up with it. I mean, what? How do you use him in a? He's kind of like Gandalf. I mean, he's young, but he's like Gandalf. He stands around holding his staff and saying, you know, we should do this to defeat the Dark One. Now we should do this to defeat, and people go out and do his bidding, you know. But he's almost as shifty as the bad guy. He's an absolutely fascinating character. I love him to death, but I just have a hard time seeing how he would work in a movie just because he's so complicated and so ill-defined in a way.
And see, that's one of the reasons I think it would be a mistake to introduce him, because I don't think you could do it and not have it seem like a deus ex machina kind of thing.
That's what he is. That's what he is. He's a living Deus Ex Machina. And I guess what you could do is just give his part to Mar-Vell and have Mar-Vell be Star-Lord's father, right? And then everything ties together.
I guess. Maybe. You know, somehow we got to get Carol into this too, but I don't know how that's going to happen unless she just immediately appears in her own movie. Of course, I've been afraid since they've basically shelved the Inhumans movie and they're changing the Infinity Gauntlet and War movie titles.
Yeah,
and maybe the underlying stories.
Yeah,
I hope they don't do the same thing that they did to the Inhumans to the Captain Marvel movie.
No, I don't think so, because they want to have another woman-based movie. I
Kevin Feige, I think, I read something that said that they're committed to doing a Black Widow movie now.
Yeah, I did hear that. That's true. They need to do it before she's too old, I guess. My gosh, they're going to wait forever. But think about this. We know that the Ms. Marvel movie is supposed to come out between the two Avengers movies.
Right.
And so in that case, it could be very much like Black Panther in this movie, where you introduce her in the first Avengers movie, number three.
Right.
And then she gets her solo movie like the Black Panther's getting, and then you use her in the final Avengers.
Right.
So that would be my ideal. I certainly hope they don't. Man, was sad enough to hear that they shelved the Inhumans movie temporarily. You know, we don't even know. I mean, they just, basically what Feige said is we have several other movies we're more anxious to do, and so we're putting it on the back burner until a spot opens up. And well, I'm feeling a spot's not opening up before 2020.
Well, you know, they may well have another Iron Man movie or another Cat movie because Chris Evans and Robert Downey Jr. both have said they'd be willing to do them. They'd be willing to extend their contracts.
Wow.
Well,
yeah, because there's some money left in the world that Robert Downey doesn't have. So he'll have one more, and then he'll have all the money.
What was it? One of the things we're not talking about, though, in these future movies is where does Doctor Strange fit into this? I can't believe they're going to do a Doctor Strange movie, and then he's just not going to meld somewhere into the universe.
Here's the theory. You ready? You may have already heard this.
I'm afraid of theories. I won't. Yeah, go ahead.
Here it is. The Eye of Agamotto is a gem.
No, absolutely not.
You know it'll happen. You know it'll happen.
Wait a minute. But they've already introduced all of them.
There's six. I can only account for four. We got the one that was in Loki's staff that is now the Vision's jewelry. We've got the one that was in the cosmic cube. I don't know where it is now. We got the red thing from Thor the Dark World. I don't know where that is now. And we've got the one that was in Guardians of the Galaxy. There's still two left, right?
I don't want to be the eye of
But just think about this. Everything that's magical in the Marvel universe or super high tech is either the microverse or the soul gem or the Infinity Gems.
But see, that's the thing I don't want. I want Doctor Strange to actually be magic.
Well, this is the wrong universe for that, sir.
But they've said it's going to be like Thor,
right?
Where it's science that appears as magic.
Well, now, see, they did the whole thing in Ant-Man that opens up this quantum realm. So I figured that's where it's coming from in Doctor Strange.
Well, anyway, if the Eye of Agamotto becomes a soul gem, that throws the whole, you know, outer beings that he entreats power from out the window in some ways. Yeah. Since Agamotto in the Marvel Universe is pretty much the most powerful thing that exists.
Yeah,
you know he can beat up Galactus if he needs to.
Oh, there's a dozen people that could beat up Galactus at this point.
Well,
but think about, I mean, the one thing I could see, I totally agree with you that in terms of Doctor Strange, it kind of messes things up. But in terms of the rest of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it would make Doctor Strange the warlock character because he's the guy who's the outsider with a gem and a big cool cape who could come in and be like the not.
Oh my God. I can't believe you just proposed that. That so fits.
Don't you see Doctor Strange showing up in the last Avengers movie to kind of be the warlock character and kind of direct everybody and give them their marching orders. Now Iron Man, you do this, you know, now Cap, you do this and I'll do this.
And if the eye is the soul gem, ugh. Okay, I'm going to put that on the back burner of my mind and not think about it until the movie comes out.
That's probably a good idea. That one comes out in November, right? Is it November?
Yeah.
I'm really looking forward to that. What did you think about getting Rhodey back? I like Rhodey.
Oh, I liked him. I liked everything about this. I was actually worried that they were actually going to kill Rhodey based on the previews early on. And I'm kind of glad they did. But that's partly because I really like Don Cheadle.
Yeah.
So, again, everybody who had their parts, you know, Anthony Mackie as the Falcon was fantastic during this movie.
I said before, I love Sam in these movies, but I also love that Iron Man repulsed him in the face and knocked him out. I mean, as long as he's okay and didn't break his neck, I'm glad that Tony got up. Tony's like, ah, get away, zap, and blows him away. But yeah, I thought the Falcon is much more interesting in the movies than he really ever was in the comics.
Yeah, I didn't, you know, I saw the Falcon mostly in the Avengers because at the time I didn't really read Cap very much. I'd pick up little runs like when John Byrne was drawing it or something, and the Falcon was never in those.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, he's got interesting powers and abilities in the movie. Like he's got the bulletproof wing shield and the robot Red Wing, you know, and he's got more stuff he can do. They really just do a good job visually, I think, with him. I never would have thought that either. You know, it's interesting how characters that are in the comics are not that interesting can be very interesting in live action, and characters that can be very interesting in the comics maybe don't translate well into live action.
Right.
And Falcon definitely is an improvement, I think.
Well, they did a lot of ingenious things by changing his wings to something that's on his back as opposed to underneath his arms. You know, right. Him being able to use it as shields and things of that nature as he's flying.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
One of the other things I liked about this movie is I felt this was a really strong movie for Hawkeye, even though he's not in it a lot. And he finally had some of the Hawkeye personality that from the comics we read, not from the Ultimate Hawkeye.
Right. We've had Ultimate Hawkeye all this time, which has annoyed the crap out of me.
John likes to say that they gave Hawkeye's personality to Tony Stark, leaving Hawkeye with no personality.
Yep. I've always said that too.
But, maybe it's you who said that. But anyway, I've always thought that really sticks. But in this one, at least he was a bit of a smart ass. And I liked him getting in Stark's face when they were on the raft.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Well, how much do we now need a Vision in Scarlet Witch movie?
I don't think we necessarily need a Vision in Scarlet Witch movie. I mean, I really liked that they had that little beginnings of some sort of relationship between them, but I think they can develop that over time in the Avengers movies. I don't think right now that they could carry a movie by themselves. Now, that's not to say I wouldn't be there, but still, I can't think of what they would do in that movie.
They're the only ones, though, out of the whole cast that haven't either had a solo movie, gonna have a solo movie, or were strongly featured in somebody else's solo movie. You know, they've only appeared in these group movies so far, and
that's Hawkeye too.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah, that's true. He's the other one. Yeah, I would just like to see. I guess what I really want is a Meanwhile at the Mansion movie with Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch, the Visions, maybe Black Widow, and an actual Jarvis. I just like them hanging, and then Ms. Marvel and the Black Panther. Not the big hitters, you know. I'd like the movie equivalent of one of those issues of the Avengers where the big three are off doing something else, and you just get like, here's what's going on. You know, the Beast is lifting weights, and Hawkeye's flirting with Scarlet Witch, and the Vision's, you know, doing this, that, and the other. You know, it's that little stuff that I love so much.
That's something that I think they do a little bit of, even in this one. You know, they had Vision and Scarlet Witch making dinner. Yeah. I don't know that they can really do that in movies. The scenes kind of have to have a point to drive the story.
If there was a Netflix B-League Avengers series that where you got like, you know, 10 episodes of the non superpower Avengers back at the tower or the mansion or what they got whatever they got now. They got like a complex out in the woods that Tony built for them. But, what about Zemo? We haven't really talked about Baron Zemo. I mean, he wasn't the Zemo we expected by any means, was he?
No, he wasn't, but I really liked him. I mean, he's not a huge presence in the movie throughout because the real conflict is between Tony and Cap. But when he's in the movie, I think he had a strong personality. I think that he drew you in, especially towards the end. I loved his motivation. I loved why he was doing what he was doing, that he's basically out to destroy the Avengers, not the world and not the universe and, you know, all that kind of stuff. That was a relief. I'm so glad we didn't see tons of buildings falling down and, you know, all this other stuff like that. I just, that gets to be overload. I like that he survived because I hope he comes back. I think Daniel Brühl is a really good actor, and I think he could play a really good, subtle villain. So,
Yeah, did you want to see him with a mask over his face and pink furry collar?
You know, I didn't. I mean, I guess my initial thought was, yeah, we're going to get that kind of Zemo, just like we had, you know, the Red Skull with an actual, you know, deformity. Right. But I'm starting to get used to the way they redefine some of these characters. I think that if he had looked like that, you couldn't buy him doing what he was doing in this movie.
No.
He had to be an ordinary guy with some special abilities, you know, special training, that kind of stuff to accomplish his task, but he couldn't be an actual super.
Well, some people are speculating that the five people he killed from Russia at the end were the Soviet super soldiers. Others are speculating they're the Thunderbolts. Your thoughts?
No, I think the connection is more obvious than that. You know, the Winter Soldier goes and steals those packets out of the back of the car, and those packets have a blue color to them. And the first thing I thought was, oh, it's the super soldier serum.
Right.
And what happened to them is the same thing that happened to Emil Blonsky in the Hulk. He became strong, powerful, and irrational.
Yeah.
And I think all they did was create Emil Blonsky's, hoping they were going to get Captain America's.
Right, right.
So I think that's the simple explanation that's there. I don't see any reason to waste the super soldiers or, you know, that kind of thing by doing, you know, having them killed.
Yeah. I tell you what, I don't know much about Marcus and McFeely, but they're doing a pretty decent job writing these things, don't you think?
Yeah, I think so. I would be happy. I hope are they going to work on the Avengers movies? I haven't even looked.
As far as I know, yeah, it's going to be the same crew that did this one and Winter Soldier. So I feel like, you know, I love Joss Whedon, but after Age of Ultron, I was like, you know, let's step away and let somebody else. Let's put it this way, as long as I had confidence in who was going to come in, I was okay with Joss stepping away. And after Winter Soldier, I'm like, yeah, I'm good.
You know, it's funny because Joss Whedon is known for his ensemble cast in television, but I think the Russos do a better job with it. I just feel that the characters are better defined and have their own personalities more so than they did in the second Avengers movie. Now, the first Avengers movie is just like up on a pedestal somewhere, and there's very little that can touch it. But in the second movie, it was almost too predictable. This is going to happen to this character. That character is going to die. This is, you know, it was too formulaic. And that's really weird talking about a comic movie.
Well, let me ask you this now. We got time for a few more topics, and I want to see what you think about, I'm trying to scroll down and, okay, here he is. So we've seen Phase 1 and Phase 2. Ant-Man brought Phase 2 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe to an end. Captain America Civil War opened up Phase 3. So let me run down the list real quick, and then I want to ask you which one you're looking forward to the most and why. We've got Doctor Strange this year. 2017, good heavens. In May, we got Guardians of the Galaxy 2. In July, we got Spider-Man Homecoming, which is like an in-your-face Sony, which is kind of funny. And in November, we got Thor 3, Ragnarok and Roll All Night and Party Every Day. In 2018, good Lord, we've got Black Panther in February, Avengers 3, we'll call it for now, in May, and Ant-Man and the Winsome Wasp in July. And then in 2019, we've got Ms. Marvel in March and Avengers basically Part 4. May. That still leaves like November of 2019. They could squeeze an Inhumans movie in, but I'm just saying. So of those, which one are you?
Which one am I most looking forward to? God, I don't know.
It's tough, isn't it?
I mean, my gut reaction is to say the Captain Marvel movie because I've been a Carol Danvers fan since I accidentally picked up Ms. Marvel 15 and read it.
Let's take the Avengers 2 out of the picture anyway, even if you
They're ensemble things.
Of the ones, well, I'm going to leave Guardians in there though because I think that's fair game. But
honestly, I think it's I think it's Doctor Strange. I mean, I'm really looking forward to the Black Panther movie, but I think it's Doctor Strange because if they do it right, if we get a lot of Ditko-like magic and all that kind of stuff, it's going to be a kind of sorcery you've never seen on the screen before. And I've always loved Doctor Strange, and I can't believe we're getting a full picture out of it. The only thing I'd ever seen before was the TV movie, which, you know, he just quotes a couple of verses and a demon rides down a flashy laser lit tunnel. I hope it's a visual spectacle with a really good story.
You know, if we take the Avengers movies out, there's no question to me that the one I'm looking forward to the most is Ms. Marvel in 2019.
You do know it's Captain Marvel, right?
The one I'm looking forward to the most is Ms. Marvel. I went on record over like 2 years ago that this movie is Ms. Marvel. I mean, I'll never call it anything else. If they do a movie with Marvel, which I would totally welcome, I'll call it Captain Marvel. But yes, I'm looking right now. They've got Christopher Markus and Stephen McFeely working with the Russos on Avengers 3 and 4. And so that's all they're working on now. And we got James Gunn directing and writing Guardians of the Galaxy 2. Here's what's interesting. Thor Ragnarok, which is probably second for me because I just love the two Thor movies. I think that people that think The Dark World was horrible are crazy. I love that movie.
I'm crazy.
I just love the whole Jack Kirby, Walt Simonson Thor on the big screen. I just love it, and I love everything they've done with it. But get this. Thor Ragnarok is directed by Taika Waititi and produced by Stephanie Folsom. No, and written by Stephanie Folsom. I don't even know who Stephanie Folsom is. I wonder what's that all about.
Well, I don't know. I haven't actually, like I said, I've been avoiding spoilers, and I haven't really looked too deeply into the Thor movie yet, or who's even doing it. All I know is it's going to have Thor and the Hulk.
The Hulk?
Yeah. You didn't know the Hulk was going to be in Ragnarok?
Mm-mm. Nope.
Yeah, it's going to be Thor and the Hulk.
I figured it was the Hulk.
I think somebody has been cast as Hela. Huh. Or the Enchantress, one or the other. I can't remember now.
In it. Is he going to pretend to be like a rock troll or something?
Oh, I'm sure he's going to I don't know what he's going to be in it, but I'm sure he's going to be involved in destroying Asgard somehow.
Beating up Loki again.
Yeah, it makes me wonder if this is, you know, if it's going to be Ragnarok and you're going to start destroying Asgard, which I can't help but feel that somehow or another Thanos is going to have to be involved in that.
You know what they're going
to do. That it's going to drive Thor after Thanos. I mean, who are we going to lose? Is this going to be the last movie with Loki in it?
I hope not. They're going to change the name of this movie then.
Ragnarok?
Yeah, they're going to change the name of it. Nobody knows what the hell Ragnarok is but you and me and five other people. They're going to change it to Thor versus Hulk. If it's got Hulk in it, you got to make it Thor versus Hulk. Come on.
Well, I don't know.
How much more money will it make if they call it Thor versus Hulk than if they call it Thor Ragnarok? Was in it.
Well, I think if they advertise it right and show the Hulk in the thing, I think it won't matter.
Yeah,
I think people will have a bitter taste in their mouth with the word versus in a superhero.
Yeah, that's fair. That's a fair point. But I still think.
And not only that, but you'll also have the wait a minute. We had these two guys fighting in this DC movie. We had these two guys fighting in this thing. Is that the new gimmick now? You know, I think Banner's going to be involved. And he's going to become the Hulk. And I don't think if they fight, it's going to be one of those short accidental things. Yeah. And then it's going to go the right direction.
Have at thee, monster.
Yeah.
He
doesn't like that anymore.
I know. It's too bad. I gotta say, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, just real quick, while I've got you on the line here and we're talking in front of our audience about this great stuff, because we're gonna have to wrap it up in just a minute. What do you think Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2 is going to be all about? I know we're going to find out who Star-Lord's father is in the cinematic universe, and that's all well and good, but what's the story? I mean, who's the villain? Where do you go after Ronan and Thanos and Nebula and...
Man, I don't know, because this incarnation of the Guardians, I'd never read them. This is all really, really recent. I'm Starhawk and Nikki and Charlie and Martin X kind of guy.
Let me tell you, because I read them and love them. I'm a huge Dan Abnett fan, as everybody that listens to my show knows. And by the way, Dan's got a new story out in an Aliens Colonial Marines book that's coming out. Dan Abnett has a story in it, and friend of the show Keith DeCandido has a story in it too. So I'm going to run out and buy that book, and I recommend you guys do too. It's Aliens Colonial Marines. Guardians of the Galaxy, though, the Dan Abnett Guardians of the Galaxy, they had an extended run where their foe was the Magus. I've never known how to pronounce that.
Magus, Magus? I don't know either.
Version of Warlock.
Magi. I would assume it's, you know, singular of Magi.
Okay. So, yeah, that's a good point. So, if you're going to have Warlock, I guess you could have the Magus in it, but I'm just saying he was like the main villain in a lot of the Rocket Raccoon Star-Lord Guardians of the Galaxy.
Well, see, but if they use him as the villain, I think he'll be just simple what he is. I don't think he'll be connected to Warlock and that kind of thing, unless, again, Warlock is Star-Lord's father somehow in some weird way that could happen, but...
I think it's a lot more likely that it's Star-Lord or Captain Marvel than I do that it's anybody people are actually predicting that it is, like Eros or something, you know. So
maybe it's Thanos. No, that doesn't make
sense. Now that would be funny, but he's not an angel, though. He's the devil.
Right.
They said it was an angel. I figured the only angelic characters that are associated with the Guardians would be Marvel and Starhawk.
I was going to say maybe it's Starhawk.
It could be Starhawk. You know,
Starhawk had lots of kids.
I didn't know that.
Well, what's her name? Alita.
Alita, yeah.
Yeah.
That's something else I just don't see him bringing into the comics. So, I mean, the movies. So.
Oh, but that would be so great. I'd love to see Starhawk.
I would. I would too. I think people would love to see the old Guardians completely, but we're not going to see Yondu. Oh, that's not going to happen.
Hey, he was there in spirit.
Kind of.
Yeah, but, you know, at least he had the arrow he could control by whistling.
That was pretty cool.
That was really cool.
That was a devastating weapon, too. Dang.
Yes.
Anything else about Civil War before we wrap up?
Go see it again.
Yeah, I've only seen I really do want to go see it again.
I'm gonna let it rest for a little while and go back and see it again, and then I'll probably have my better opinion about where it fits in my opinions of all the Marvel movies. So, plus hopefully I'll pick up some stuff that I've missed.
Well, we've kind of talked about the post-credit scene where the Winter Soldier is in Wakanda. What did you think about seeing the spider signal?
Eh.
I was excited.
I mean, it's fine. I don't have a problem with that. That end scene was mostly just a reminder that there's going to be a Spider-Man movie. There wasn't a whole lot to it.
But we hadn't seen the spider signal before, had we?
No. I mean, again, that's cool. It won't be cool if he gets the spider buggy.
or eight or six arms or whatever, remember?
Right. I think the most amusing thing about that end scene was him talking about that he got beat up by a guy named Steve from Brooklyn. So... I like that.
I wouldn't mind seeing the Kingpin from the Netflix Daredevil be showing up in the Spider-Man movie. He's a good villain.
He is a good villain. I think he's too gritty for what they're going to do with the Spider-Man villain. I hope, based on what happened with this movie is going to be much more kid-friendly. Yeah. Less people, electrified people, you know, destroying, frying people on the streets, that kind of thing.
I think that'd be a good move. That'd be a good move. All right. Well, I think that's going to bring us to a close tonight. Bobby, I appreciate you coming on. That was a lot of
fun.
I knew that we would find a whole new batch of stuff to talk about, and we sure did. So we'll get you on again at our next opportunity. We're both free to dig into the next topic. So,
well, if nothing else, in November.
Yeah, we got
to talk about Doctor Strange.
Let's go ahead and make an appointment now to talk about Doc Strange. Oh yeah. By the hoary host of Hoggoth, it must be.
Yes.
All right. Well, the Rocket's going to get on out of here for another week, and this was episode, I believe, 95. So,
man,
we are closing rapidly in on the anniversary show, and I about decided now, I'll go ahead and spill the beans. I think that for the 100th anniversary show this time, I'm going to go around and get people to record a brief segment telling me what they want to talk about in the next 100 shows. How does that sound? So I'll be calling you back up and getting you to record that for me, and I'll get a bunch of other people that have been on the show just to talk about what we should talk about in the second century.
Sounds cool.
Yes. All right, so we're going to get out of here, and thanks again, Bobby, and we will see you guys down the road.
Tranquility Base here. The Eagle has landed.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Give Oscar a pet for me.
I will. I'll go out there and tell him to stop meowing at the door.